James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
You betcha, baby, and we got a lot of truth to pass out to you today. Welcome to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to have each and every one of you along with us today. How you doing? Hope it's a nice day where you are. Hope you don't have any ice, snow, high winds, forest fires. We've got all that around here. No, we actually have had some fires lately. We're in kind of a drought situation, and I don't know, three or four mornings this week, you open up the front door of the house, and the smoke is waiting outside. Yuck. Don't like that. But that's a rarity. By and large, the weather here is very much like paradise. And it's about 92 outside this afternoon, and a gorgeous afternoon. And again, I hope it's nice where you are as well. Many things to talk about today. We've got a visitor coming up around 4:07, Liam Madden. He co-founded the Appeal for Redress. It's a way in which individual service members can appeal to their congressional representative and senators to try and get an end to this damn war. Seems nobody else will. And what else we got? Oh, we got quite a bit of email over our caller friend the other day that's, you know, the gentleman that called and said he was a Marine and all that and proceeded to show us his ignorance. Anyway, we've got a few minutes of Republican love for you today. Yes, we do. And so we're gonna do that for you. And first things first, I always pride myself in giving you correct information on this program. And when we find out that we don't, we like to correct it right away. And yesterday I gave you a little story down toward the end of the program about Joan Baez supposedly being banned from performing at Walter Reed Army Hospital at the invitation of John Mellencamp. It turned out that that is not true. Mellencamp's camp says that they did not get her name in. Yes, they did invite her, and they didn't get her name into the officials quick enough to get her on the program, and therefore she did not perform. But as far as Mellencamp knew, there was no animosity toward Joan Baez, and even the officials at the Walter Reed Hospital, if we're to believe them, and we hope we can, say that she's welcome anytime. So just wanted to correct that. Didn't want anybody to go off half-cocked with the wrong information. That happens. And speaking of wrong information, I see that the Washington Post had a story up today that the Democrats have backed down on the timetable to end the war and any new appropriations bill that might come up for the war. And Pelosi and Harry Reid are denying the Washington Post story today, saying that the congressional Democrats have backed down due to the White House by offering to remove Iraq withdrawal language from the now vetoed Iraq bill. So I don't know. What's the truth there? hard to say. We are dealing with politicians, you know. always when politicians, you have to look at with a jaundiced eye at the Washington Post, the Washington Times, and the politicians. So it'll be interesting to see who's telling the truth there. But Washington Post says they're backing down. And the others and Pelosi and Reid say they are not. So we shall find out the truth here soon, I hope. Ah, yes, we see the official Guy James Show puppies just walked into the studio. We keep them out in the lobby. And they've decided to walk in the studio. Kukla and Sophie are now in the studio, just raising Kane. I bet you we're the only people that broadcast the show with our puppies in the background. I hope they don't make too much noise today. Sometimes they like to let themselves be known. What do you think? Do you think the Democrats are going to back down on this thing? Like I said, no bill. No bill at all. Forget it. No bill. Don't want a bill? Sit on it. Force him to stop the war. Don't fund it? Nothing he can do. And I hope Mr. Bush, the Coke Spoon Cowboy there, will be forced into ending the war. And also this week, famous dates in the news. This sent to me by my friend Paul. Said this week we celebrated a special birthday. Monica Lewinsky turned 31 this week. Can you believe it? Seems like only yesterday she was crawling around the White House on her hands and knees. They sure do grow up fast, don't they? And I see that there are 7 Democrats in the House that voted against overriding the president's veto. John Barrow from Georgia, Dan Boren from Oklahoma, Lincoln Davis from Tennessee, Jim Marshall from Georgia, Jim Matheson from Utah, Michael McNulty, how did he get in there, from New York, and Gene Taylor from Mississippi. 5 of the 7 from the South. Well. And I'm just going to throw this out here as a curious little aside. I was jumping around the internet today, and I went by the Nova M Radio website. Can anybody tell me, and I'm just saying, can anybody tell me why Nova M Radio would be running a large ad for the John McCain campaign on their website? I forget which little button up above you have to push. It's one of the categories. And there is a petition for the surrender is not an option for the McCain 08 campaign on the Nova M Radio website. Someone want to explain that to me? Hey, before we get going too far, we've got callers on the line. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Phil up in Daytona Beach. How you doing
today? Yes, Phil.
I was holding off until the Guy James official puppies came into the studio.
Oh, yeah.
Before calling. But regarding the Bush vetoing the funding bill, I think this is now a chance for the American people to once again say no funding, no more.
You know?
And we cannot let these Democrats, give them another bill.
That's right. I agree. No more bills.
No more bills, damn it. I mean, there is enough money in the pipeline to get these kids out of there and get everyone out of there safe and sound. And you know what, Guy? The Dems will give Bush another bill, because the Democrats in Congress are serving the powers that be.
Some of them are.
And until the American people use the power of the American people, these politicians are politicians, man. They're going to go whichever way the dollar pulls them.
That's right.
You know, you got a few good people, but they're vastly outnumbered. And, I mean, look what happened to Conyers, you know. He was a good man. He had the impeachment. Geez, he wrote a damn book on the thing. You know, they could have impeached, to get impeached Bush and Cheney on the lies and all that run up to the war. But he got squashed.
He got smacked down, didn't he? He certainly did.
He did. So there's powers that the American people have to, what's the word for it, you know, go up against and outweigh. And there's 300 million American people, man. We largely outnumber. If you take one out of every 300 people, you got a million people.
You know, you're right, Phil, and I would bet you a dollar to a donut that if we took, if we had, let's say we took 2 weeks from Saturday,
yes,
and designated that impeachment day, and we said every eligible voter in the United States go to the polls on that Saturday, you don't have to take a day off work, and vote yes or no on impeachment of this president, I would bet you anything that he'd go down.
They blow up the machines. I mean, I was down to the event in Miami Saturday, and I'll tell you, Guy, I've been to these events. You know, I've been to large, you know, half a million people at demonstrations and stuff over the years, you know. And there was an energy, Guy, in Miami-Dade when we protested Butch, and it was National Impeachment Day, you know, the A28.org. And I'm telling you, you know, to see the Cubans out there and the Hispanics and, you know, people of all shapes and sizes, all ages, you know, the people have had enough of this BS, and we're ripe for it, man.
I think there's little question he's the most hated man in the world, period. There isn't anybody close.
No, and you know what? He's going to stay in power until we the people pressure these people, and you know, these so-called representatives, they are representatives in Congress. It's just they ain't representing us.
Yeah.
They're representing the military industrial complex.
Representing K Street over there.
You got it. And the people feel so powerless. You would be amazed what kind of power you can create by just exercising your own personal power.
That's right.
I that sounded kind of, I don't know if that made sense.
It makes sense. They know where you're coming from.
Yeah, man. And I was at a protest the veto rally yesterday, and some of my activist friends up here wouldn't go because they said, "Oh, that's a Democrat thing, and it's supporting the Democrats funding the war." And I said, "Man, get past that. Just get your butt out there and say no more war. Toss these guys out." And that's what I do. I get out in the street and...
Whether a person's part of the Democratic Party or not, they have to look at it as a practical matter. And there's no way independents are going to get be a solid force in this country, I don't think, without being affiliated with the party. And whether you like everything the Democrats are doing or not, and I certainly don't, you got to look at the overall picture. And by and large, we know what they stand for, at least. Now, what they're doing is a completely different matter. But we're going to need the help of the Democrats.
Oh, sure. And that's what I was telling my friend, man. Stop with the BS. We got to get out there and tell these Democrats that are in power what we want. And until we give them enough persuasion to counter the persuasion that the powers that be give them, they're going to keep going serving the powers that be. And we do have power. I mean, look back in history, Guy. Look at the 50s and the 60s. Look at the women with the suffrage,
yep,
you know, getting the vote. Look at the trade unionists, you know. Look at the civil rights. It always came from the people.
The union movements,
everything
we had was fought for by the regular people, not the upper crust, not the politicians, the good old solid people that built this country.
And it's what was that, Margaret Mead, you know, never forget that a small number of, you know, like, you know, concerned people can change the world. In fact, that's the only thing that ever has, you know.
That's right.
Someone correct me on that. But every day that we're not exercising our power, folks out there, you know, we got kids in our own kids in Iraq dying, and we got them killing 100 for every one of us. We got them killing 100 Iraqis who their only crime is living there, and that's being done in our name. You know, we're consenting to that by not objecting to it.
Well,
we're not objecting to it. We're consenting to
it. It's time to draw a line in the sand, a deep line in the sand, and not let it be crossed. It's time to stop the compromise. It's you know, I'm hearing all this talk out of Washington. Well, you know, absolutely no.
Get on the phones, folks. Hit the fax machines. Send the postcards. Tell them no more funding. No more deals.
Thanks for your call, Phil. Good to hear from you.
Thank you, Guy.
You know, I'm a loyal and patriotic American. I am, and I know you are as well. I hear it in your voices when you call and your emails, and I believe that it's my duty. You know, they talk about us all the time. Well, you get out and protest, you talk about this. It's my duty to make my voice heard. It's your duty to make your voice heard. And to do less would be to surrender my responsibilities as an American. To do less would make me exactly what Bush and everybody accuses and his detractors of being would make us traitors if we didn't speak up. And Mr. Bush, I can say that your veto of the war funding bill is not only disastrous, but it's shameful. In that cute little veto speech, you again repeated ridiculous, venomous accusations that those who oppose you offer comfort to the enemy and were unwilling to quote you, support the troops. Mr. Bush, if you believe this, then you also have to logically believe that you are equally unwilling to support them. You're the one who thrust them into this deadly, untenable war. You're the one who has repeatedly lengthened their tours of duty. How do you think that makes them feel? How do you think that helps the morale? You're the one who tried to hide their flag-draped coffins and welcome the maimed back to a squalid Walter Reed hospital that you tried to hide. It was you, Mr. Bush. You sent them into harm's way, poorly equipped. And you have conducted disastrous policies that have killed thousands of soldiers and American civilians, along with tens of thousands of innocent Iraqi civilians. And your actions occurred long before a timetable was agleam in any Democrat's eye, and you have the temerity to point to these acts and speak of progress? These actions, in my humble opinion, are the very antithesis of support. Mr. Bush, your veto was not about timelines or benchmarks or pork barrel projects or any kind of political maneuvering, and you know it. This veto was about avoiding something every one of those troops has to face daily: responsibility. They swore an oath, not unlike the one you swore, Mr. President. They hold that oath sacred. They do not run. They do not refuse your orders. They go to war and they fight and they die. And if they're lucky enough to survive, they return only to leave their families and go back again and again. Because their oath said they must follow the orders of their commander-in-chief. These men and women have a different definition of their oath than you do, Mr. President. Their oath is sacrosanct. And despite the fact I totally disagree with any utterance you have ever made about this war, I solidly support every last one of them in carrying out that oath. And for you to accuse me otherwise is a personal insult to me and every other patriotic American who thinks likewise. How dare you, Mr. Bush? How dare you? I've heard you live in a bubble, but I'm sure you've heard the voices of the people. They're impossible to miss. They're loud and they're angry, and you've seen the increasing number of people taken to the streets in an ugly reminder of the last time we blundered into a war that served no purpose, just like this one. You know, a lot of people have made light of your veto coming on the anniversary of your embarrassingly infamous mission accomplished speech. I think we could all agree that there's a lot of irony in that date. But there's another date in the news tomorrow, May 4th, 1970. That's the day four Kent State students were killed in a Vietnam War demonstration that went horribly wrong. This date doesn't represent irony, Mr. Bush. It reminds us of a dangerous time when America was driven by wholly avoidable strife because of a war our leaders were too damn cowardly and irresponsible to end. Mr. Bush, your continued efforts to keep this war alive in the face of overwhelming and growing opposition of the people is just as cowardly and ultimately just as disastrous as the actions of the Vietnam-era administration. So in the vain hope that you still have a shred of decency, I implore you to actually negotiate with congressional leaders when they talk to you. The time is long past for feigning flexibility while you pour concrete around your positions. I'm immovable. I'm Mr. George Bush. The time's long past calling your fellow citizens traitors. And the time is long past for this whole shameful episode to end. I sincerely hope that you finally decide to stand up to the responsibilities of your oath and your duties as the Commander-in-Chief. You may say that those who believe it's time to withdraw are cutters and runners, but if you do, I choose to say that you're a damn fool. I grieve for this country as long as this man is the president. I am so ashamed. I'm so ashamed to have a man like this as the President of the United States and for him to get his way. God, the damage it's done. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello? Going once, going twice. Guess nobody's home. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We hope you'll give us a call. Talk about what's on your mind today.
think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century? And how do we resolve conflicts between tribes and the federal and state governments?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that. It's sovereign. It's, you've been given sovereignty and you're viewed as a sovereign entity. And therefore, the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
What are you, on dope?
We think so, too. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Yeah, and if you're sovereign, you're kind of, you know, a place that's got sovereignty, and which would make you very sovereign. And speaking of sovereignty and the sovereign, we're going to talk about the Queen. Something I normally don't do a little later in the show. And why do I laugh? Because I think the whole damn thing about the monarchy is just absolutely hilarious. Always have. Never could understand that whole thing. But we're going to talk about that in a little while. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy. It's Dave, California.
Hi, Dave.
Giving you a break for a few days here. But, you know, I still keep connecting the facts as I see them, that this war is so very, very profitable to that small little remaining PNAC Carlyle group, that, you know, Halliburton and Lockheed Martin, Bechtel and Cheney and Bush and that little clique is making so much money. That is playing a real part in why we're there. It is not just incompetence, belligerence, ignorance. It is the fact that they planned from the earliest days at PNAC they were going to invade and make the big bucks doing this in the Middle East, and they've been on plan.
Well, Dave, they're sociopaths without conscience, and they're getting away with it, so how could we expect them to stop?
I think it's so hard for most Americans to see how truly dreadful these guys are, how the extremes that they will go to, and the amount of harm they're willing to heap on the many to get what they want for themselves.
Oh, you're absolutely right. There's a lot of people that, A, don't want to believe that they're that bad, that they're just a little bit incompetent, or they've just made a few slight mistakes. And B, there's the folks like us, that there aren't as many of us as there needs to be, that understands that these people are just plain damn evil.
Well, yeah, and the key to solving a problem, the key to sound mental health, is to see reality clearly. You know, nobody wants to go down that path. Nobody wants to see these guys as dreadful as they are. How can this happen? How can our government, our wonderful country, have fallen into the hands of such criminals as that? But reality is it has. They rigged it. They planned it. They stole the country, and they're there, and they're in effect, they're responding to the people with their finger, saying, we don't care a damn thing about what you think or what you feel. We control elections, you know, and I think that it's getting to a point where I don't think even Diebold and Sequoia is going to be able to save it for them. I think they're going to down in the 10-11% popularity. People are becoming aware as much as they seem to hate it. You know, they want so much to believe it.
Well, you know, it's like the old smash and grab, the people that take the hammers into the jewelry store and knock all the cases out and grab everything as fast as they can. They get away with it for a long time, and then they finally quit because they've got all the loot they need. And, you know, these guys have, it's amazing how brazen they've been.
Well, it is my opinion they're not going to quit. They have some kind of a psychological thing that the next $1 billion that we take is going to be what's making us happy. It doesn't make us happy, but
it's some
kind of crazy.
It's
voice.
The power that goes with it. How else do you explain some of these people? What is it they say? Enough is never enough for the man for whom enough is too little, and for these people, enough it will never be enough. Thanks, Dave. Good to hear from you.
So appreciate what you say. You have to tell us, Guy.
Thanks, Dave.
Stay with it, Bill.
How'd you like to be a Republican tonight and be in that that debate? Now think about this. They're going to be, what, eight, 10 of them? I don't know, something. I can't keep track of them all these candidates running for president. But here they are in a primary. And in the primary, they have to play, every one of them has to play to the diehard nutcases that's still back junior. Stay with me on this. They do, don't they? All 10 of them up there on the stage really have to appeal to the crazies, the 32 or 34%, however you look at it, that still are in love with Junior Bush. So they got to appeal to them. How do you appeal to them and at the same time think ahead at the general election and know that you've got to take reasonable people along with you to the polls? How do you back Junior Bush on one side and give the Republican line chapter and verse tonight to appease the lunatics who voted Bush into office and then come back in the general election and say, well, I'm very moderate now. I'm reaching across the aisle because, hey, you've got to take some of the independents with you. You've got to take a few from the other side with you. And you've got to have your whole party, even the ones that are disenchanted with Bush now. You've got to bring those Republicans back home. How do you do that if you're this gang of Republicans that are up there right now? I mean, you take a look at this group they've got up there right now. Oh, my God. You've got McCain, the ultimate flip-flopper. You've got Rudy, the con man, Giuliani. You've got Tom Tancredo, for God's sake, who and I hope everybody remembers this, said that we ought to go bomb Mecca. Please do remember that he said that. We ought to go bomb Mecca. Here's a guy that's standing on a stage tonight at the St. Ronald of Reagan Library, running for the presidency of the United States, and he's doing it on a anti-immigration theme. A guy standing there doing that wants us to give him any kind of credibility at all when he said we ought to go bomb Mecca? Who the hell would say something like that? He's a raving maniac. And then you've got, Gingrich threatening to get into the whole affair. Who would vote for a Newt Gingrich? The ultimate hypocrite. The most hypocritical man that I think I've ever known of. I don't know. It's got to be damn tough to be a Republican right now. It's got to be just very, very difficult. How would you do it? How would you do it? They've got to talk about the war. And I don't know how many of you agree with me on this. I think we did have a moral responsibility to try and fix this mess that we made. And I'm saying we, not you and I. We were not in favor of this war. But we as a country, I think we had some kind of a moral responsibility to try and fix the mess that we made. Which is not a great point someone who's arguing for withdrawal wants to really get into, but we made this mess. We did. And if it meant staying and fighting for another 10 years and losing another 3 or 4 or 5,000 soldiers in the process, we might even be obligated, so long as the end result would be some kind of a peaceful and stable Iraq that would otherwise not come about without our continued presence there. But, and it's the crux of the whole matter, if we can't succeed in bringing stability to Iraq, as I firmly believe we cannot, then there is nothing that obligates us to have more of our own soldiers killed to no good purpose. Adding more dead soldiers to the already staggering number of dead Iraqis fulfills no moral obligation at all. It's not as if the soldiers chose to invade Iraq and will personally pay the consequences for it. And their deaths at best serve only to delay the day of reckoning that is the resolution of the Iraq Civil War. So, yes, We probably do have a moral obligation, but it can't be fulfilled by allowing our soldiers to die for a mission that can't be completed, and it cannot be completed. In fact, it can't be fulfilled at all. You know, we're not going to be relieved of the burden of guilt for having begun this war, nor are we any less of hypocrites, no matter how long we stay and how many soldiers we lose in the process. We, as a nation, and we, as the people of this nation, allowed this to happen. Now, we can all go back and say, oh, gee, what could I do about it? Well, whatever it was, we didn't do enough. There should have been a hue and cry. There should have been people marching in the streets when he was even considering going into Iraq. We had the truth right in front of our noses from Mohammed al-Baradei and the likes of Scott Ritter and many people, many other nations. By and large, the people of the world didn't want this war to happen. But the sad fact is, obligation or not, it's abundantly clear now that we can't fix this. We cannot fix this. And if we have to live with the guilt of it, so be it. But I don't want to live with the guilt of knowing that thousands more American soldiers gave their lives there in vain for something that could never be corrected by us. It really sucks. It's such a terrible situation. It really is. Hey, tell your friends and neighbors. In fact, let's just do it right now. Don't know where all the music went. Let's see if this is it. Yes, it is. Thank you to the orchestra for getting on over here. Going to have a few moments of Republican love. Call your neighbors. Some of the feedback we got this week about our little right-wing caller the other day. Sir, a nice salutation, don't you think? Very respectful. I listened to your program yesterday, and I have to tell you, I've never heard anything so disgusting. Even that queer commie, Al Franken, isn't as hateful and nasty as you are. I guess he didn't know that Al's not around anymore. I heard you tell a caller that you'd bet he couldn't find any lies in your show. Well, I went back through your archives and listened to most of six shows. Busy guy. During the fifth one, I finally found a fat lie. And now you have to eat it, pal. You called Karl Rove a bastard. Karl Rove is not a bastard. He had a full set of parents. A bastard is someone without a father. So you, sir, are a liar. You knowingly lied to your audience and said Karl Rove is a bastard. He is not a bastard. Liar, liar, liar. So are you going to apologize to your audience for lying? Tim from Dayton, Wyoming. Well, Tim, I have to admit you almost had me there. I know a bastard is an illegitimate child, and I'm fond of using that term, as my listeners know. So I was, in fact, just about ready to apologize to you for the error. However, I looked it up in my pocket electronic dictionary here I keep on the desk, just to make sure. And bastard is also listed as being, quote, an offensive person, end quote. I ask you, Tim, if Karl Rove isn't offensive, who is? So, I'm sorry, Tim. Didn't quite work out for you there. Mr. Smartass Guy James. So you think President Bush is stupid? How can you call a man who achieved the honor of being the President of the United States stupid? Over 60 million people voted for him. That's the most votes a president ever got. He went to Yale, Mr. James. Did you go to Yale? Well, as a matter of fact, no. He owned oil wells. Did you own oil wells, Mr. James? He was president and CEO of the Texas Rangers. Have you ever had a similar job? I guess my question here is, who really is the stupid one, you or him? Gary from Austin, Texas. Well, Gary, George Bush couldn't even get into the University of Texas. He went into Yale in 1964, but clearly he got in there because of affirmative action. Affirmative action for the son and grandson of an alumni. Affirmative action for a member of a politically influential family. Affirmative action for a boy from a fancy prep school. They still do this. The Wall Street Journal, you may be interested to know, Gary, reported that Harvard accepts 40% of its applicants who are children of alumni, but only 11% of applicants generally. So, you know, until Junior Bush, in fact, may be the most spectacular affirmative action success story of all time, and of course we know he's against affirmative action. Think about this, Gary. Up until 1994, when he was 48 years old and got elected governor of Texas, his life was almost empty of accomplishments. Yet bloodlines and connections had put him into Andover, Yale, and Harvard Business School, and even provided him with a fortune after years of business disappointments. Intelligence, hard work, and other qualities associated with the concept of merit had almost nothing to do with Bush's life and success up to that point. Bush was not the CEO of the Texas Rangers. He was a managing general partner. That title is short for my daddy called in some favors and his pal gave me some stock in the team, and then by scamming public land for a new ballpark, I was able to sell my stock for a fortune. No investment, big returns. You don't suppose the whole thing happened because his daddy was president, not because Junior had any business acumen, do you? And don't forget that Junior drilled a hell of a lot of dry holes when he was in the gas and oil business. And don't forget, while daddy was president, he almost got caught for insider trading, and would have if he would have been any normal person. In 1992, the U.S. News and World Report reported on some questionable dealings, including possible insider trading involving Harkin Energy stock. And they ultimately, the SEC, decided not to punish Bush. And here's the last one. You asked for email? Well, here is one. Yours is the best comedy show on the radio and internet. I laugh my ass off every time I listen to your show. Funny stuff. George Bush is an idiot. He gets rid of Saddam Hussein, keeps us safe from another terror attack for nearly 6 years after 9/11, has the Iranians crap in their pants along with the Syrians, and George Bush is an idiot? Listen, brother, you have a lot to learn. You talk about the 34% of Americans who still support Bush as being stupid. Did you ever consider it's the other 68% who are the stupid ones? Now, I had to stop there as I was reading this letter. And he said, you talk about the 34% who still support Bush. Did you ever consider that the other 68 are the stupid ones? And then I got my pen and paper out. 34 and 68 equals 102. And he's calling me and us stupid? Has some kind of new right-wing math at work there. And he goes on to say, and before you pull out that phony crap of asking me why I'm not fighting in Iraq, I have a medical condition. I have very bad nerves, and I'm not allowed to go. But I would fight for George Bush. I would help slaughter enough Muslim ragheads to make them think twice about coming over here and causing trouble again. You see, I love my country, and I would fight for it if I possibly could. Chris, in Memphis, Tennessee. I have a tear in my eye. I have a tear in both eyes, as a matter of fact. The sentiments in those letters are beautiful. And I encourage the authors of them to keep writing and let us know what's in your heart. All right. A few moments of Republican love. Let's go back to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Kevin from Washington.
Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, I was in your neck of the woods yesterday in Florida.
Ah.
Anyway, yeah, I have to say, first of all, I do agree partially with those two guys saying Bush is not stupid, meaning he's he plays the part of a fool to get the attention of guys like these because they only like good old boys. What do you think on that one?
Is he a guy with drool running down his cheek and his chin and over in the corner and the dumbest guy in the room? No.
No, but
Would I take him on intellectually? Would 75% of the people in the country be able to take him on intellectually? I'd say absolutely yes.
I just think he just plays that part because, you know, I think that segment of the country, like the Forrest Gump types, and he plays the part as a Forrest Gump.
Well, here you go. I'll save this for later. I've got a clip from yesterday. Oh man, it's incredible.
You know, they don't want anyone too smart.
Well, I guess not, but they used to talk about him, the Republicans putting Warren G. Harding in. Hey, look over in the corner, let's put Harding in. He'll do what we tell him to do. Well, this guy's outdone Warren Harding.
Yeah, so I just think, you know, he's doing what he has to do to get the power, which is what they all do. And if it means playing the fool, they'll play the fool. Ford did it. He did it with a bit more class than Bush did. You know, he played your consummate Henry Blake from MASH kind of character.
But, yeah.
You know, Bush decided to play Forrest Gump, and it's working.
Well, I hope to God nobody like him ever comes along again.
The family's through. That's why the father was crying at the Florida State House.
I think you're right. I hope he's lamenting the fact that he thought Jeb. And I got to tell you, I live in this state, and I had a go around about this yesterday about the new insurance rates. Jeb Bush left this state in such a disastrous condition that.
I know.
People outside this state are talking, extolling the virtues of Jeb Bush. Oh, it's too bad the junior screwed it up for him. Jeb Bush screwed up the state of Florida so bad.
All by himself.
Unbelievable.
I know. I'm paying insurance rate. Why do you think I'm living in Washington?
Yeah. Yeah, we got some bad news yesterday about the property insurance that, I know people don't believe me when I tell them what it costs. I know they don't.
I believe you because I'm paying it right now.
Yeah, it's licensed thievery. Jeb Bush and his insurance commission here allowed it to happen. They've done the same thing with property taxes, the insurance companies are laughing all the way to the bank, and Jebby is walking around and going around the country giving speeches like, oh, look at me, I'm poor me, my brother screwed it up for me, you know. He's not saying it, but you know that's what.
You know, Jesse Jackson said something 10 years ago, America, keep out of those bushes, and we should have listened to him.
And you're exactly right. Hey, thanks for your call. Good to hear from you.
Bye.
Yes, the insurance man cometh, and he's wearing a big damn black cloak with a hood over the top of it, carrying a big scythe along with him. If the insurance man, property insurance man in Florida right now is not the Grim Reaper, I don't know who is. We're staggered, many of us, absolutely staggered over this property situation, insurance. It just, I could go into it. You wouldn't believe me if I told you. It's beyond belief. I actually, yesterday, in talking to one of these insurance guys, And by the way, everybody, you know, the insurance, a lot of the insurance companies pulled out, took their profits for the 10 years and pulled out. In the last couple of years, gouged people like crazy and made another fortune and pulled out. And just left everybody high and dry and having to be insured by this state insurance, which is the insurance of last resort. And you talk about prices, you talk about gouging. It's like, oh my God. I know people that, well, are in dire consequences because of it. Dire consequences, believe me. And everybody says, well, why don't you just sell your property and move out? Mm-hmm. When you go up and down the street and every property on the block is for sale, not quite so easily done, believe me. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Once there was a way to get back homeward. Once there was a way to get back home. Sweet pretty darling, do not cry. And I will sing a lullaby. Golden slumbers fill your eyes. Smiles await you when you rise. Sleep, pretty darling, do not cry. And I will sing a lullaby. Once there was a way. Get back home. Once there was a way to get back home. Sweet darling, do not cry. And I will sing a lullaby.
Ah, people asking who that is. That's Jackson Browne. And Jackson Browne and Eva Cassidy. Beautiful, beautiful song. Beautiful, beautiful piece called, I don't know what it's called. I have to look that up for you, I guess. I do love it. I do love Eva Cassidy. And I have to thank Billy Shears, music director, for sending so many good tunes our way. Do enjoy the music that Billy sends. We're always on the same wavelength on music about 99% of the time. Once in a while, he sneaks something in there we don't agree with, but most of the time, he's right on the money. 866-546-5254. We hope you'll give us a call sometime during the show. We got an interview coming up at the top of the hour, right after the news, that I think you'll find interesting. Are you going to watch the so-called debate tonight? I wish they wouldn't call those debates, because I was on a debating team in college, and I can tell you, these aren't debates. God, I'd love to see a good old-fashioned debate with these politicians. That would be great. And now Junior Bush is saying, you know, you talk about lowering expectations. Junior has now said that an acceptable outcome for this war now would be an acceptable level of violence. First, it was a democratic government, and you'd get rid of Saddam and install a democratic government that would give freedom to all the Iraqi people, and they'd have all their infrastructure repaired and be able to live happily ever after off the oil revenues, and spread democracy throughout the Middle East. Remember that whole story, that whole scenario? That's what we're after, folks. We want to spread peace and love and democracy throughout the Middle East by establishing a democratic government in Iraq. And yesterday, he said, well, you know, a good outcome there would be to get it down to an acceptable level of violence. And, you know, he said to people, there's places right here in the United States that have violence. And there's always going to be a little violence. But if we can just get it down to where it's acceptable, what the hell does he mean by acceptable? Only 30 people a day getting murdered in Baghdad? Is that what he means by acceptable? Does he mean only half a dozen car bombs going off in all of Iraq in a day? Does that mean acceptable? What is it he means? Well, I love the way he backtracked into that. The bastard. He went from a stable democratic government in Iraq, with democracy spreading all over the Middle East, like you painted a little bit of ivy there, and it just spread throughout the Middle East. It spread to Syria, and it has spread to Iran, and it spread to Afghanistan, and Jordan, and the Palestinians would come around, and oh my God, it's going to be beautiful. That's what they told us. And now, well, we just want to get the violence down to acceptable level. We get it down to there where that everybody's only got one AK-47 instead of a half a dozen in the back room. Why, that'll be okay, and we'll go home then. Although he didn't actually say go home. Yeah. Well, somebody asked me on the chat room, did I hear of Mary Ann Donella, great artist in Tampa? No. Actually, no. I haven't. I wonder, I don't know who that is. Maybe I'm really missing something big there. I'm sure they'll let me know. Well, we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. And I hope you'll be around for the second hour of the show. We're going to have an interesting program for you. We already did our few moments of Republican love. I know you all. We're waiting for that. I was as well. Most of them I can't read. Most of them I can't even straighten out enough to read. They're either unintelligible or too profane to read even over the internet. How profane is that? Hey, listen to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to take a break for news at the top of the hour, and we'll be back after that. Don't go away.
This is the Quality News Network. In Egypt, a five-year roadmap for security and prosperity of Iraq was discussed at an international conference attended by world leaders. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice was also in attendance. Rice met today with the Syrian foreign minister after 2 years of no U.S. contact with the country the White House views as a state sponsor of terrorism. This is the first of two high-level talks between the U.S. and Syria. At the conference, Iraqi prime minister asked the international community to forgive Iraq's foreign debts. Nouri al-Maliki says debt forgiveness is a critical measure if his war-torn country is to recover. As expected, Congress did not have the votes to override President Bush's veto of a war funding bill, which included an October 1st deadline to bring the troops home. Leaders of both parties are now negotiating the terms of a new bill after yesterday's House vote failed 222 to 203. Democrats have agreed to drop the demand for a troop withdrawal, but insist on a measure that would require Iraqi accountability and, quote, a reasonable way to end the war. Lawmakers from both sides of the aisle in Washington are angry with Iraqi politicians over the fact that they will be taking a two-month summer break. Iraq Parliament's recess would begin in July without completely addressing sectarian violence while U.S. troops continue to fight it. The terrorist allegedly responsible for the kidnapping of American journalist Jill Carroll in January of 2006 has been killed in fighting north of Baghdad. U.S. military officials say Abdul Latif al-Jaburi was a top al-Qaeda operative and also assumed to be responsible for the kidnappings of peace activist Tommy Fox and others. In Tel Aviv, a mass rally is scheduled today calling for the resignation of Prime Minister Ehud Olmert. The Prime Minister was the target of a scathing report earlier this week, which blamed him for the failure of the 34-day war in Lebanon against Hezbollah. In Los Angeles, an investigation has been launched into police actions at a May Day pro-immigration rally. Police used batons and rubber bullets to break up the demonstration in a downtown park. Some were injured, including reporters and camera crews from the local Fox and Spanish-language Telemundo TV networks. The first televised debate of Republican presidential candidates will be aired tonight on MSNBC. 10 presidential hopefuls will participate in the debate, which will be moderated by anchor Chris Matthews. Wally Shearer, the fifth American in space and the only U.S. astronaut to fly in three of the nation's space programs, has died. He was 84 years old. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Coming up next, science and business.
We want you to know about an honest source of information on one of the country's most desirable vacation destinations, Carmel by the Sea, on California's beautiful central coast. That source is the best address in Carmel, carmel.com. Just a few simple keystrokes and you're visiting a beautiful website that mirrors all that Carmel stands for. Quality, character, tradition, beauty, the great outdoors by the sea, cultural heritage, quiet, and the best shops, charming inns, superb dining, world-class art, music, and theater, a cornucopia of delights. So when you're planning your next getaway, go to the best address in Carmel, carmel.com, for tips on everything Carmel. Then put that honest information to good use by visiting Carmel by the Sea for an unforgettable getaway. Carmel.com.
A drug-resistant strain of tuberculosis has surfaced around the globe. The virulent strain of TB has been detected in 37 countries. Doctors say this particular strain of tuberculosis, which can be transmitted through coughing, spitting, and even talking, will kill half the people who contract the disease. The U.S. Senate has passed a measure calling for uniform standards in labeling ingredients in pet food. Currently, manufacturers list the contents voluntarily. The legislation is in response to the contamination of animal feed, which has sickened and killed thousands of pets in America and Canada. The founder of now-defunct Ameridet has been imprisoned for violating a court order to turn over assets to repay customers of his credit counseling firm. Are the customers of the credit counseling firm whom his company cheated. A federal judge says this former CEO is shielding his assets from the court settlement. The Dolan family will take Cablevision Systems private in a deal worth $10.5 billion. Besides providing cable TV to the New York area, Cablevision also owns Madison Square Garden. Texas Instruments will build a second factory in the Philippines. The semiconductor company says it will invest $1 billion in the new facility over the next decade. And the Dow Jones Industrials broke another record yesterday, moving past 13,200 for the first time. Light sweet crude is trading at $63.22 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange on a Wall Street this hour. The Dow Jones is up 10, trading at 13,222, the NASDAQ up 7, and the S&P up 5. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The world is getting older. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to have each and every one of you along with us today on the program. And without further ado, as promised, I told you we had an interesting guest coming up this half hour, and we certainly do. Liam Madden is co-founder of the Appeals for Redress, and a lot of you are going to say, well, what's that? I'm going to let him explain it. Liam, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Guy.
You are in an interesting organization. You helped found the organization, and I wish you'd go ahead and tell us, take the ball and run with it here, just exactly what is the Appeal for Redress.
The Appeal for Redress is a campaign of active duty and reserve National Guard service members who are appealing to their members of Congress to end the occupation of Iraq. It says, as a patriotic American, proud to serve my nation in uniform, I respectfully urge my political leaders in Congress to promptly withdraw all forces and bases from Iraq. The war in Iraq will not work, and it is not worth the price. It is time for U.S. troops to come home. It's also sponsored by three other organizations, Veterans for Peace, Military Families Speak Out, and a member, and Iraq Veterans Against the War, of which I'm a member as well.
Oh, yeah. We've had Michael Hoffman, I think, on the program from Iraq Veterans Against the War. How long have you had this organization going?
We started up in October, and then in January 15th and 16th, it was Martin Luther King Day, and the day after, we actually brought it to Congress. We had around 1,200 signatures at the time and submitted the appeals to their actual congressmen, and now we're looking at around a little more, just under 2,000 signatures we have now, and so it's continued to grow.
What kind of response have you gotten from the congressmen so far?
There's been a small handful of congressmen that have shown support: Dennis Kucinich, Raul Grijalva, and Jim McGovern from Massachusetts. But for the most part, Congress as a whole has, actions speak a lot louder than words, and Congress as a whole has done nothing to defund this war or make it any more likely that our troops will be coming home anytime soon. They've continued to fund the war. They've given President Bush more money than he asked for in this this most recent bill. And a lot of people might think, well, no, all I've seen in the headlines of news is that the Democrats are trying to push for withdrawal. They're really opposing this war, when in fact their bill allows for, not only does it keep funding the war, but it allows for the terrorists to, president to continue fighting in Iraq if he deems it is with the interests of national security. And also, it allows the U.S. government to keep forces in Iraq for fighting terrorism, for special operations, and for force protection, which is a catch-22, because if there are forces in Iraq for training Iraqi soldiers and fighting terrorism and such, then obviously you're going to need troops for force protection. So the bill was absolutely toothless, and I'm glad it's been vetoed.
You're exactly right. I think many, many people didn't know exactly what was in that bill. I think they could have kept anywhere from, I don't know what it was, the exact numbers I forget now, but 50 or 60,000 troops in Iraq permanently. There was a whole lot in the language of that thing that wasn't acceptable at all. And what I've been proposing on this program, you know, a lot of people are saying send the bill back. I'm saying don't send any bill. I think just batten down the hatches now and don't send him another bill. Force him, and that will force him to put an end to this. He can't there's no place he can go for the money.
Exactly. Another strategy I heard, this is a little more obscure, but a presidential candidate named Mike Gravel had suggested making it a felony to stay in Iraq.
Yeah.
It's a different way of looking at things, and it's completely not likely. But there's things Congress can do to really actually oppose the war instead of just giving the impression that they oppose the war when, in fact, they continue to fund it.
Well, they're just there's a lot of cowardice there, I'm afraid. And you were in Iraq. You were with the United States Marines, right?
Yeah, I was a Marine from 2003 to January 2007. I got around 3 months ago, and I did a seven-month tour in Iraq in Anbar province.
So you got a chance to see all the progress we've made there then. Would you?
My seven-month tour, from late 2003 until today, I have not seen the American military help make Iraq a more stable and safe country. In fact, I met a couple Iraqis that say that they were happier and felt more secure under Saddam, which is it's a sad thing because choosing between this occupation and Saddam Hussein is not a choice anybody should have to make.
Definitely not. And, you know, that's the one thing that always pops up. Well, we got rid of Saddam. One wonders. I heard that they had a whole half hour of electricity in Baghdad yesterday. So wonders just how much better off they are. You know, that argument always comes up no matter what. That's the first thing. Well, we got rid of Saddam. Was it worth it? I don't know. I guess that's above my pay grade to decide that. Everybody in your organization is ex-military or still in the military, I might add, right?
Yeah, vast majority, I'd say 60-70% are active duty. 85% are enlisted. Around 15% are officers. We've had highest rank of colonel to sign the appeal. Most are, though, in the E-4 and E-5, corporals and sergeants, petty officers in the Navy.
So you provide some protection, I guess, for these guys. I mean, a lot of these guys, if they're actively joining an organization like yours, wouldn't they fear some sort of retribution from command?
No, actually, that's the beauty of the appeal for redress, is that it's a protected communication free of reprisal to your member of Congress. So there's no way that your chain of command should be involved in this. It bypasses the chain of command.
Does it always?
The only people who are involved in the media are the people who choose to be involved in the media, and that's something that the individual service member needs to decide on his own, how much of a devotion he has to really ending this war and how much sense it makes for his personal circumstance. But yes, I've not heard of one instance of someone signing the appeal for redress and having any sort of retribution or reprisal.
Well, that's good to hear. I have heard that the military is clamping down on blogs and email and so forth of what you can put in them, and now the blogs. Some of the bloggers that are over there have to get permission to post certain things on their blogs. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, there's a friend of mine named Ron Cantu who has a blog called soldiersvoices.net, and he's actually in Iraq right now. He's a sergeant in the Army, and the LA Times just did a story on him recently, and he's gotten some feedback from his command, but, you know, I think he kind of knows the line which he should not cross, and he's been pretty careful about it. But, yeah, the military doesn't want there to be a lot of dissent, but at the same time, most of us are acting within our within military regulations and within the freedoms granted to us by the First Amendment, which we are still members of American society. We're still afforded those rights.
Well, I know it's a difficult question to ask, but you were there. You served active duty in Anbar province. You keep in touch with guys who are still active duty and maybe some who are not. What percentage would you say offhand are believing that this war is a good thing?
I'd say a rough estimate would be around one out of every three people in the military believe that the war in Iraq is indeed being fought to defend American interests, or they might have some sort of skewed idea that it's in response to 9/11.
And it's a tough position to be in, because that's what you would want to believe, isn't it, to make it worthwhile?
Exactly. And it's I think that's a common symptom throughout America, and definitely in the military, that people need to justify this, and it would really shake up your view in reality if you thought that the war in Iraq is what it actually is, and that's an illegal war based on lies, commonly held belief that it's fought for oil, and it's hard for people to actually come to grips with that.
Well, I think if you're over there in 120-degree heat with 50 pounds of equipment on your back and having people shooting at you and driving over what might be IEDs every day, you might well want to think, well, this is a good thing that I'm doing here. But sooner or later, the reality has to sink in to most of them, and evidently it has.
Exactly. It's not a very clear-cut thing, though. I mean, in Vietnam, it was a different... There's a lot of parallels to Vietnam, but it was different in that there was one enemy, for the most part, that could be identified and was fighting for a clear-cut cause, whereas today, you know, it's hard to have sympathy for people who, blow themselves up in the middle of a marketplace. So it's that kind of chaotic environment and the lack of a clear-cut enemy and a clear-cut purpose for the enemy, it really makes it... It really confuses the whole and distorts the whole image for people. So it's hard to have sympathy for that.
Sure.
People who oppose the war in that sense.
You've got an activity coming up. What is it, in Springfield, Massachusetts, this coming weekend? Are you part of that?
No, but I believe the co-founder of the appeal, Jonathan Hutto, will be there speaking on a panel. I'm not sure where it is, but it's Springfield, Massachusetts, the other day.
You can look that up on appealforredress.org. It's on their website, and all the activities and what this whole organization is all about. I'm proud of you. I'm extremely happy that somebody's doing this. I'm not a lifelong dove or any of that sort of thing. Wrong is wrong, and this whole business has been wrong. And it's a good thing that people of your ilk are coming out and saying so and have the courage to stand up and fight back against the whole business. And I'm very happy you're doing so, and I'm very glad you were on the program. I want to thank you so much, Liam.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and keep up the great work.
Thank you. Liam Madden from... Appeal for Redress, and it's a great organization. Again, that's appealforredress.org, and it's important that some guys in the military and ex-military are doing this. There are several organizations, sister organizations for them, as he mentioned, the Veterans for Peace, the Military Families Speak Out, and Iraq Veterans Against the War, and we've had people from each one of those organizations on the program, and we will continue to do so to try and get their message out. If enough organizations band together and work together in this whole thing, who knows? We might be able to get a little better outlook on it than we have right now. I'm certainly not happy with the way things are going right now. I'm hearing, and I wonder what the story is. We're hearing that the Democrats are going to back down on the benchmarks. We're hearing from Nancy and Harry that they're not. I'd like to know just what the overall story is on that. We're going to pause for a break. We'll be back in just a couple.
Don't go changing. Try and please me. You never let me down before. Don't too familiar, and I don't see you anymore. I would not leave you in times of trouble. We never could have come this far. I took the good times, I'll take the bad times, I'll take you just the way you are. Don't go trying some new fashion.
Madison again at the Constitutional Convention. A president is impeachable if he attempts to subvert the Constitution. The Constitution charges the president with the task of taking care that the laws be faithfully executed. A president is impeachable if he attempts to subvert the Constitution. If the impeachment provision in the Constitution of the United States will not reach the offenses charged here, then perhaps that 18th century constitution should be abandoned to a 20th century paper shredder. Has the president committed offenses and planned and directed and acquiesced in a course of conduct which the constitution will not tolerate? That's the question. We know that. We know the question. We should now forthwith proceed to answer the question. It is reason and not passion which must guide our deliberations, guide our debate, and guide our decision.
The late, great Barbara Jordan talking about impeachment back in the days of Richard Nixon. And that entire talk that she gave right there is completely apropos for today's situation with Junior Bush and Mr. Dick Cheney. Don't know that two characters have ever deserved impeachment any more than those two. I think there's little question about that. I also believe, as we said earlier in the program today, that I'm thoroughly convinced that if we had a day where everybody could go to the polls and talk about it and vote on it as whether or not Bush should be impeached, I say the Democrats have the American public on their side on this. I don't think they'd need to worry about it. I think the American public would vote his ass right out. Put them both up, Cheney and Bush, and have a vote. Be interesting, wouldn't it? What do you think? Would there be a lot of people say, "Well, you know, I would"? People get squeamish all of a sudden. Say, "Well, you know, I don't want to cause a lot of trouble, and you know, that's causes quite an upheaval in our government, and it's another black mark on the country and." And I don't know if I want to. Do that or not. And maybe that's too extreme to impeach this man. Oh my God! If there's anybody that ever deserved an impeachment, it most certainly is this tandem of Cheney Bush. There's little doubt in my mind about that. 866-546-5254. Love to have you give us a call. Our friend Bruce from talkingradio.blogspot.com is going to be along with us in just a few moments. Man, still suffering through those allergies. Always got a Kleenex box close by. I should have stock in Kleenex, although I buy the generic brand, of course. Being the good Democrat that I am, I go down to the old CVS pharmacy and buy the cheapest. That's right. Man, there is a big difference in the price, too, between the Kleenex brand and, what is it, the Puffs brand. I don't like the Puffs brand. They've got that lotion in it, and you can't clean your glasses with them. Your glasses get all smeary. And these cheap old generic ones, why, you can clean your glasses just fine with those. Boy, that's germane to the whole conversation we have going on today, isn't it? I know the president likes to avoid tough questions, and we see that all the time. They put up, little softballs for him. And he prefers the pre-screened audiences who tell him what he wants to hear. But yesterday, and I know a lot of you noticed this, yesterday was just absolutely ridiculous. Bush spoke to the Associated General Contractors of America, which just showered him with the kind of support and affection that the president craves. And after his speech, he opened the floor to questions, and he was asked the following. In May of 2006, this questioner said, "My second cousin was on his second tour in Iraq, Corporal Corey Palmer. He's in the Marines. He was on parole in a Humvee. They ran over a roadside bomb. He and many others in the Humvee perished. What do I need to do? What does the media need to do to help you so that my second cousin and others like him have not died or been injured in vain?" They asked Junior that. And a second question, "I'd like to know, like a lot of other people in this room, we have family members. We have family members who are actively involved in the security of this country in various ways. From them, we receive positive information that we consider credible, who say about the success and the good things that are happening as a result of us being in Iraq. I would like to know why and what can be done about we, the American people, receiving some of that information more from the media." One softball question for him after another yesterday. Oh, it's sickening. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, good afternoon, Guy. Bill from Toledo.
Hi, Bill.
Listen, you have to excuse my voice today. I am not over that cold yet.
Well, I'm not over mine either. I guess I don't have a cold. I got an allergy thing going on here.
In fact, it seems like it's getting worse. But I'll be a little bit quicker than last time, Guy. I went to Crooks and Liars, and I was checking their website out, and I downloaded a short video from Terry McCarthy from ABC News, Baghdad correspondent.
Mm-hmm.
He was on Charlie Rose. And he was talking about the sectarian violence over there.
I saw that.
You seen that, huh?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you something else to look at after make a comment on that. But from what I understand, in listening to that when Saddam Hussein was in office, and I'm not giving anything to that guy, except I think the country was run a little bit better under Saddam Hussein rather than under Bush. Probably a lot less violence, a lot less people being killed. I think there could have been another way to work this out. But the people that has really been hit hard in Iraq is the women.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and
certainly.
Because I went to Google a video after I seen this thing on Media Matters, or Crooks and Liars I was telling you about. I went to a Google video, and I downloaded a video. It ran 48 minutes. It's called Dispatches Iraq, the Woman's Story. And they're the ones that have really, all the people over there have, but they have really taken a hard hit, because where they were able to go out, work different jobs, play sports, and just numerous other things, now they are under this sectarian
oh sure
You know, and they have, just not counting all the widows and that, but the ones that have to walk around that are not able to perform their jobs as doctors and lawyers and just other numerous things that those women can't do anymore.
It's the innocents that always suffer the most in a war.
It's really horrible, but you got a chance, Guy. Check that out.
I will.
Patches from Iraq.
I will.
Listen, I'm not going to take up your time.
Thank you, Bill. Good to hear from you. Get over that cold.
Yeah, I'm going to try to. You take care, Guy.
Bye now. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Guy?
Yes.
It's Bruce Kaufman.
Hey, Bruce, how are you today? Bruce, everybody, talkingradio.blogspot, Bruce is with us. How are you doing today, Bruce?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
All right, all right. What's new today?
Well, it's been a relatively quiet week, but, you know, we always manage to find something. We're keeping, we're always on IMIS watch now. It seems like this could go on for a little while. This story, they're now talking about a $40 million lawsuit that IMIS is considering taking against CBS, which will put it right, just keep the story alive for a while, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. It wouldn't seem to me, according to a couple of attorneys I've heard talk, that he doesn't have the proverbial snowball's chance in hell of beating CBS on that, but I guess you never know.
Yeah, but, you know, it continues to amaze me how the conservative talkers pretty much didn't support him at all, which surprised me. I kind of thought, I think what they did was they decided to say what he was saying. He's a liberal. That's the conventional wisdom among conservative talkers. But Imus is liberal, and that's why he got in trouble.
Uh-huh. Well, now, Bruce, I meant to ask you about this week. We got a little static there.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could find out for us. You know, they got that madam in Washington, D.C. that's going to give out all these names. Any of these right-wing talkers' names on that? I'd really like to know.
On
that madam in Washington, D.C. that's going to give up everybody.
Well, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. As I said, it's not been a real dramatic week, but it's been an interesting week. There's a lot of little items that I expect to get posted up on Talking Radio within the next day or so. And one of them involves this woman. I don't have her name in front of me right now. But apparently, she does a talk show,
an
internet talk show.
I didn't know that.
I'm in the process right now of looking it up. It's with a company called WS Media, I believe, out of they're right here in California, and they do internet talks similar to Head On, you know, network. And she supposedly entered into some kind of financial arrangement with them, and they are going to be selling her her story. So that's, you know, that gives us a talk radio connection on this big national story. So you can expect to see some follow up on that one.
Yeah, I was expecting to see something maybe on this evening's news, but I didn't think ABC, you know, they said late in the week. I didn't think they'd hold it off to Friday night for the usual Friday night dump. I thought they'd probably do it tonight, but because they say they've got some names.
Well, we'll be watching for that.
Ah, yeah.
Thanks for reminding me. That was on my list of things to do. Yeah. In the meantime, one of the interesting things that I have here is we just got numbers for the winter ratings for talk radio, and it looks like liberal talk radio is doing okay. It's up about 10% from the fall to the winter. KQKE in San Francisco is up about 15%. In Monterey, they're up about, that's the Peter B. Collins, you know, his station there.
Mm-hmm.
KXRA, they're up about, KRXA, they're up about 20, 25%. So it looks like they got some pretty good ratings for the liberal talkers that are on the broadcast spectrum. So we'll be keeping track of that. We always like to see a positive trend developing.
That's right. That's right. It's been a little negative for a while, and like to have the voice of the left come on a little stronger.
The best news is that they haven't lost any stations in several weeks, so that's, I guess that's...
Yeah, yeah. So, see, I didn't have a lot of things on my list to ask you today. I just wanted to ask you about the madam, and doggone it, you've disappointed me. I thought, sure, that that you'd have a number one or number two right-wing talker on that list for me, but...
Well, it seems like they're going with the Bush administration people.
Yeah.
They're either lawyers that graduated from Pat Robertson's law school.
Yeah, Regent University, the finest law
Regent
school in
University.
America.
Used to be, you know, that university used to be called CBN, the Christian Broadcast Network University.
Ah.
I guess they decided that was a little too blatant plug for his.
You have to in order to go to law school there, you have to do your undergraduate work. A lot of them do it at the Messiah University in Pennsylvania, and that's that that gal's name. Good, I can't think of her last name.
Parsley or what?
In the Department of Justice.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Got
yeah.
the.
Yes.
Anyway, she went to Messiah University and then on to Regent, and one of the nation's finest law schools for sure. Hey, Bruce, give us your website.
www.talkingradio.blogspot.com.
Thank you, Bruce, and
I'm going to look up that issue. I'm glad you brought it to my attention, and believe me, if anything breaks, you'll be the first to know.
I'm the first going to want to know. I'd use that as a club. Believe me, I would do it. Hey, thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye now. Ah, yes. I'm looking on the chat room, and someone said they're having trouble getting through in the toll-free line. Believe me, we've got openings on there. You can... Bruce was just on one of the lines, and somebody else was on one of the lines and hung up a moment ago. So if you'd like to give us a call, just do that, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. I got a note from one of our listeners, and I won't give you his full name. His name is Rick, and I thought this was a very sincere note. It says, "Hi, guy. I think it's listener fatigue brought on by relentless pointing out the endless pit of unprosecuted criminality on every level of our nation. There's no good cops, no good FBI, no good politicians, no good elected officials, no good lawyers, no real heroes. What is left to be said if no one but ourselves are listening? Sure, some folks are waking up, but come election day, they will go to the polls and vote and make sure the gays can't get married, abortion will be gone, and if you vote for a Democrat, you're with a terrorist and it will get you killed. How the hell can you save a nation when some guy working at Big Ten Tires is willing to vote his way of life away because he hates gays, abortion, and believes God talks to only Republicans? I mean, this just in, Joe Lieberman was elected by Republicans, and now they're ready to elect Hillary. Why? Because they know she'll be the second best Republican president we ever had. Second only, and I loved his description here, second only to Horny Goat Bill. I'm reading the new Armed Madhouse by Greg Palast. I've read that as well. All the documented shit in this book and not one arrest. Turn out the lights. The party's over. Rick." Rick, thank you for that. That's a pretty good note. I know a lot of thought went into that, and I agree with just doggone near everything in it. 866-546-5254. You know the Aussie that works for MSNBC, where he had some interesting things to say the other night, and I wanted to play this little clip for what? Yeah.
"There has been progress, and that is in the reduction in sectarian murders in Baghdad.
Mr. Petraeus.
Which is about one-third now of what it was in January. That's an important development because the sectarian murders can be a cancer in a neighborhood. It is something on which our commanders and the Iraqi commanders have focused quite a bit.
General David Petraeus, shortly after briefing congressional leaders on the situation in Iraq and arguing against setting a timetable to pull troops out. Turns out it wasn't enough to stop the House from doing just that, narrowly approving a war funding bill that calls for combat forces to start leaving Iraq by October 1st and sets a non-binding goal to complete the pullout by next April. Senate vote is expected tomorrow, and if it passes there, President Bush promises a veto. Earlier, with a debate still going on, we sat down with CNN's Michael Ware, just back from spending time with American forces on the ground in Iraq. Michael, you literally just got back.
Yes, this is the part of this we wanted to hear.
In Diyala province. How does the situation on the ground compare to what we're being told over here?
Well, having just arrived back in the United States today, Anderson, I'm struck by the almost delusional nature of the debate that's underway. I mean, what we're hearing in the wake of General Petraeus' briefing to Congress, I mean, it's so out of touch with what's actually happening on the ground. I mean, the truth is America has a lot of tough decisions to make right now. It needs to define for itself what success really will be.
We heard today, after meeting with General Petraeus, John Bonner, the House Minority Leader, said that he was saying a lot of the sectarian violence is being backed by Iran, has been caused by Iran.
Old story. The sectarian...
True.
Absolutely. The sectarian violence is two things. One, it is the ultimate legacy of former al-Qaeda in Iraq leader Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. Now, he was assassinated by the U.S. using a precision bomb that blew him up in a house. He said from the very beginning, he wrote it, my plan is to create sectarian violence, a civil war, because that will feed al-Qaeda's aims. That also feeds Iran's aims. The more that these two halves of this society go to war, the more it feeds America's enemies. And to hear American politicians talking about putting pressure on Maliki, a lame duck prime minister who has no authority with his own people or his government, to force a reconciliation, that reconciliation is in nobody's interest.
Well, if not Maliki, what are the other options? Are there other options?
A great question, Anderson. The alternatives that are being considered are non-democratic. They point specifically to places like Pakistan and Egypt, where you have military strongmen with a quasi-democracy who first deliver security, and democracy comes after that.
Where does the so-called surge, others would say just escalation, where does it stand? How is it going? Too soon to tell?
Oh, way too soon to tell. But what I can tell you right now, that in terms of Baghdad, if you want to look at it through a microscope without looking at the rest of the country, the surge will have an impact. But at the end of the day, if America wants to win in Iraq, it would need to surge the whole country. But it can't. So what it's done in Baghdad, you're seeing changes in the violence. You hear these politicians saying sectarian murders are down. Yes, that's true. But at what cost? American deaths are up.
And that's the crux of the matter. American deaths are up. And we all knew they would be. We all predicted they would be. Hey, here's something a little funnier. I wanted you to hear that because Ware is a guy that, you know, from CNN that has spent much of this entire war in Iraq. And when you come back and use his words like out of touch and delusional, I respect his opinion on that. Heard this yesterday from Coke Spoon Boy. What do they call him? The president, actually.
And that's what we did. We put in more troops to get to a position where we can be in some other place. The question is, who ought to make that decision? The Congress or the commanders? And as you know, my position is clear. I'm a commander guy. Yes, sir.
I'm a commander guy. Yes, sirree. I'm a commander guy. I tell you, the guy can't go a whole day without saying something stupid. He really can't. Don't know why they let him out in public anymore. I really don't know. We're going to pause for a break. We'll be back in just a moment or two.
of the things that'll bring the trauma. Overseas, yeah, we trying to stop terrorism, but we still got terrorists here living in the USA, the big CIA, the Bloods and the Crips and the KKK. But if you only have love for your own race, then you only leave space to discriminate, and to discriminate only generates hate, and when you hate, then you're bound to get irate. Yeah, madness is what you demonstrate, and that's exactly how anger works and operates. Man, you gotta have love just to set it straight. Take control of your mind and meditate. Let your soul gravitate to the love, y'all, y'all.
People killing, people dying, children hurting, hidden crying. Can you practice what you preach? And won't you turn the other cheek? Father, 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 help us. Send some guidance from above. These people got me questioning. Where is the love?
Same, always in change. New days are strange. Is the world insane? If love and peace is so strong, why are the pieces of love that don't belong? Nations dropping bombs, chemical gases filling lungs of little ones with ongoing suffering. As the youth are young, so ask yourself, is the loving really gone? So I could ask myself, really, what is going wrong in this world that we living in? People keep on giving in, making wrong decisions, only visions of them dividends. Not respecting each other, deny thy brother. A war's going on, but the reason's undercover. The truth is kept secret, it's swept under the rug. If you never know truth, then you never know love. What's the love, y'all? Come on,
I don't know.
What's the truth, y'all? Come on,
I don't know.
What's the love, y'all?
People killing, people dying, children hurting, hidden crying. When you practice what you preach, and what you turn the other cheek. Father, 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 help us. Send some guidance from above.
The world on my shoulder. As I'm getting older, your people get colder. Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinemas. Yeah. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding.
Oh, we are definitely on the downslide here. About 11 minutes and 15 seconds left in the Guy James Show today. So glad you all joined us. You know, sometimes I sit here in this chair and other chairs as well, and I just sit and wonder what the hell's going on here in America. I've always been proud, you know, a very proud American, and I know many of you are, all of you probably are, and I worry about we are allowing our government to get away with. I'm worried about the perception the rest of the world has about our actions during the past few years. Because I believe the rest of the world sees me as an American, and therefore what my government does allows those in other countries to perceive that I agree with what Bush does. I find that all the time. And I think that since we voted him in as our president twice, and I find that most of them don't know anything about the voting irregularities, so they see it as voting as twice. Therefore, in the minds of the rest of the world, they believe that we are in agreement with Bush and his policies, that we, the people, agree with him. And they believe we made our choice based on self-interest for the most part. And in 2004, Americans believed that George W. Bush and the Republicans would protect us. The country believed that Junior Bush, you know, they believed him when he reassured everybody by telling them that he had everything under control. And enough Americans bought his obvious lies, and the Republicans have continued to use their power to enact that vision of theirs, that sick vision of theirs of the world. And one of the big differences between conservatives and progressives concerns the use of that word freedom. The two groups use it in completely different ways. You know, freedom for conservatives is based on some sort of an idea that they should be free to make as much money as they can. And anything that gets in their way is considered some sort of an infringement on their freedom. That's how they look at freedom. If a coal company thinks that tearing off mountaintops to get the resources out will create wealth, then they should be able to do it. And they should be able to do it without any encumbrances from the government whatsoever. And if they want to walk away from the damage they've done to the environment when they're done, then they should just be able to do that, and to hell with everybody. That's the conservative idea of freedom. Progressive freedom is just a little bit different. Progressive believe that they should be free from harm. Progressive believe that people should be assured that there's a type of social agreement in which society will not be harmed by the actions of an individual or even a company. So when we look at Bush's words about the war on terror, and George W. Bush tells us that the terrorists hate freedom, what does that mean? Since Junior Bush is, in fact, a conservative, he may actually be right to some extent. Maybe the terrorists don't want American corporations to rape the Middle East and take what they want, the oil, out of their land and leave an environmental catastrophe behind, like they've done here in many places in this country. Can you say Love Canal? But then, again, maybe the terrorists do want freedom to worship as they please in their conservative Islamic sort of way. And I would suggest that Junior Bush isn't honest with his choice of words. I'm pretty sure that the freedom the terrorists in Iraq would like is freedom from the American occupation. We won the war. We've lost the occupation. Junior Bush really doesn't want freedom. Not the kind of freedom you and I think of. He doesn't believe that people should have freedom to cure themselves or protect themselves from diseases, and he doesn't believe that we have the right to privacy, to keep our own government from spying on innocent citizens. And we're rife with that right now. These freedoms were denied by our president when he vetoed the stem cell research bill. So we should all completely understand that Junior Bush really doesn't mean what he says when he proclaims that the war on terror is about freedom. His idea about freedom and my idea about freedom are miles and miles apart. So what is this war about? Terrorism is a technique used to draw attention to a cause. Terrorism, and at least in my opinion, is not restricted to a group or an ideology. There have been terrorists throughout the history of civilization, and they've been successful in the past. And I believe there could be little doubt that terrorism will have some measure of success in the future. I think we could all argue that the American Revolutionary soldiers broke down the rules of warfare. The British didn't know how the hell to take it. They keep making sneak attacks on the British with their, you know, camouflage clothing, hiding behind trees. The British just didn't fight that way. And they looked at it as a way, some sort of terrorism. But then, again, the British massacre in Boston could have been ruled a terrorist act as well. So they knew something about terrorism, too. So I guess the question is terrorism a valid technique when the people using it are on our side? And if so, then the war on terror is some sort of a misnomer, because we select which terrorist is good and which terrorist is bad. And God knows we've certainly selected enough of them to be on our side. And when Americans torture their prisoners, isn't that a terrorist act? Did you see George Tenet defending that last night on TV? When soldiers beat civilians with clubs and you know, create the faux executions, they're acting just as just like the terrorists we're fighting sometimes. So what the hell are we doing? We launched a war in Iraq on terror with the objective to disarm Saddam Hussein. We did that, and the terrorist Saddam had been removed from power. So what are we doing in Iraq now after our successful operation? Are we still fighting this war, or are we occupying a country? That's an important question that the Bush administration really doesn't want to answer honestly. They won't even approach it. Liberation means that one takes away the tyrant and the people are free to rule themselves. And the administration contends that that's what they've done. But the reality is, it's a whole different picture. The Iraqis have increasingly risen up, and who can blame them, to oppose our military occupation. Who would want to be occupied? And when the people in the country are opposed to a foreign power living in their land, we've historically called that an occupation. But the Bush administration refuses to admit that they've occupied Iraq, because occupation of another country is not an American value. And the conservatives claim to care about American values as long as they don't name the ones that they don't like. And I believe that it's very important to call this action in Iraq what it actually is. The occupation of Iraq, not the war in Iraq. It's just another way in which the conservatives have framed the language in their favor. And everybody opposed to the occupation needs to realize that and act upon it. But what is the reality of the war on terror? Why are we still in Iraq? And what does the conservative agenda hope to accomplish here? It's beginning to look like Iraq is a conservative experiment in ideology. The Bush administration has torn down everything in Iraq. And according to conservative ideology, the people are going to rise up and form a democracy. I don't think so. We're not giving them a chance to even do that. And it's supposedly going to be a capitalist democracy where the wealthy will rise up to rule in a free market system. Well, the wealthy will make money and exploit the situation. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But how do the Iraqis view this occupation and the forces in the country? First of all, they think of them as being ineffective and uninformed. We don't even, you know, we go over there and we don't even speak the language. We have the Abu Ghraib situation. We have people kicking in their doors in the middle of the night. We have wedding parties being shot up and killed. We have rape and pillage and robbery and graft and corruption. And I don't know what all. And I'm certainly not accusing all of our soldiers of doing that, because God knows that's not the truth. But there's been enough of it now that the Iraqi people are just damn tired of it. This is not our idea of freedom. It's certainly not their idea of freedom. It's George Bush's idea of freedom. And it's not right. It's not right for the Iraqis. It's not right for Americans. It's not right for anybody. They are a sovereign country. They deserve to have control of their country. And I hope we give them control of their country. We've got to bear this on our conscience for a long time to come as a nation. Should never have happened. We let it happen. It has. And we bear the responsibility for hundreds of thousands of deaths in that country of innocent people and the destruction of their infrastructure. And I don't know how it's going to get changed back to being a decent place to live, to raise your children, to get an education. I don't know how or when that's going to happen, but I do know this. The continued death of American soldiers in that land will not bode well for anybody. Not for the Iraqis, certainly not for us. The time to end this war is now. Right now. No more bills. Encourage your congressman, your senator. No more bills. Make that call. No more bills. Don't send back the old one. Don't send him any. Starve this beast to death. I want to thank you for listening today. The Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back on Tuesday with another live show. And I want to remind you, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Have a good one, gang.